NRI Wellness. We bring you the latest in health and nutrition information, create customized nutrition programs, and walk you through the process to ensure your success.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the 10 Dimensions of Wellness. I am your host, Cammie Red, the owner of NRI Wellness, and we have another exciting guest on today. Today we have Dr. Angela Courtauld. She's actually probably going to be one of my favorite guests. She is a naturopathic doctor. She's going to tell us a little bit about what it is that she does, about her journey to wellness, how she got to this point. And thank you, Dr. Angela, for just being on. Why don't you start telling us who you are? And
sure. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on. My name is Dr. Angela Courtauld. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I practice in Oregon. I have been in private practice for about 8 years. And previous to that, I grew up and all my studies were in Portland, Oregon. So I went through undergrad and then medical school. Very early on in my undergrad time, I actually got in a pretty significant skiing accident and went through a whole surgical and rehab and physical therapy and all of that process. And even into my medical school years, I was still sort of struggling with lingering knee pain and weakness and instability. And so it was actually in my early years of medical practice that I thought I really got to I was doing what I thought of a lot of healthy things in terms of diet and lifestyle, but still really struggling in this physical way and thought, okay, what else can I do? I really need to take a second look at this and figure out what can I do to reverse the trajectory that I was on. I didn't in my late 20s want to keep going down the path of worse and worse joint health. So starting with research and finding regenerative injection therapies, looking into that, being really interested, attending conferences, and then deciding, again, in my earlier years of practice to really dive into these types of trainings and bringing it into my medical practice. And through that process, getting some of these done on myself, I thought this is a really great complement to natural medicine, to naturopathic care. And so over these last 8 years, what I've really been doing is putting together, like, what is my framework for the thought process, like how my brain works when someone is coming to me with chronic joint pain, whether or not they have a diagnosis of osteoarthritis, and what does someone work through in terms of that process? What is being evaluated? What did they already try and maybe have some limited success or no success with? Maybe that's why they're finding me. And what else can we look into? And I realize there's this huge gap in between, go to physical therapy and take some ibuprofen, which is usually step one, to, well, that didn't work. Are you a surgical candidate? And I thought there is just this huge chasm here where it really, we need to be putting in more steps. What can someone be doing to help that joint and their body overall, of course, to sort of shift the balance from, okay, we found some osteoarthritis or some degenerative joint disease. And, you know, how is that playing out in their day-to-day life? And what can we do to shift that balance from that degeneration into regeneration? And so that's my mission in life, is to bring all of the tools of naturopathic medicine and regenerative injection therapies and sort of fill that gap between the first thing didn't work, but maybe someone doesn't need surgery right away, or maybe they're even told they're not a surgical candidate. I would say for a lot of my patients, it's really common for them to be told, oh, okay, that first thing didn't work, but you're not quote unquote bad enough yet. You have to wait 5 or 10 years or more before, like, they're not given anything. They're just told to wait and sort of suffer day in and day out and year in and year out until they're finally a surgical candidate. So that's really where I'm coming in with my message of like, no, there's actually quite a lot
there's
more.
There's a middle between being either just in therapy or all the way to surgery. There's a place in between that we can find a happy spot as opposed to being in constant pain until you become a surgical candidate.
Yeah, there really should be.
So yeah. Are you creating, is that what you're creating? You're creating that happy middle spot of the regeneration of those joint areas? Because let me just say this personally. You know, the older we get, the more, you know, those joints become, they start to squeak and, you know, stiffen and things like that. What are we needing to do? How are we needing to, and I'm interested in your answer to this because you're not going to give us a traditional medical type of answer. What is it that we need to be doing? Like, for instance, I'm 40. What should I be doing right now at 40 that would support me when I'm 60 with joint health?
Well, I can speak briefly or very long about this because my whole book is really answering your question quite literally.
So tell us first, tell us about the book, tell us where we can find it, and then answer the question.
Okay. We'll follow your rules. So the book is called Younger Joints Today because that is my message that there's this anti-aging message out there that is very focused on what you see in the mirror. And I just want that conversation to actually extend into our internal environment, into our joints. Like, it's not just about whether or not you have wrinkles. Real anti-aging, I feel like a much more powerful version of that is to get our joints to heal. Kind of tipping that teeter-totter between things just sort of wearing out and going away and instead building them up and building them up even stronger than they were previously. So my book is Younger Joints Today. You can find it on Amazon. You can search the title or my name. It'll pop right up there. And so
now it's also on your website as well, correct?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, so drcortal.com, it's drcortal, and you can find it there as well. So the whole structure is a 7-step plan. And so what this is my sort of distillation of my thought process of what should someone really go through in terms of what's being evaluated for them, what's not, what's being told, oh, that doesn't have anything to do with this conversation whatsoever that I might disagree with, just based on starting off with my history, but really, really the last 8 years of my practice and seeing like what has someone been sort of struggling and just barely hanging on with their incapacitating pain and what has not been looked at for them. So to kind of go over those 7 steps at the very beginning is a diagnosis. And that might seem like the most obvious thing ever, but I tell you, the number of patients I've had who say that they are some sort of hip pain, back pain, whatever it might be, and I'm certainly not the first doctor that they've seen for this, but that it comes out that they've never really had much of a physical exam ever. I just think like we got to start right there. So many people out there, they're given the physical therapy referral and then they're given maybe some medications and no one has actually, no provider has really gone through a comprehensive physical exam to figure out where the sources of pain are coming from.
Wow.
Low back pain is not, it's not all the same. We all have different sources.
So what's being happening, what's happening is people are being medicated and not treated.
They're not even being evaluated. Yeah. And I think it's a shame. And any of us who have had pain for any duration of time, like you, I don't think this is too much to ask at all. Just think to the care that you've been receiving out there. And if you haven't had someone spend some time to do a physical evaluation to try and figure out what specific structures are causing the pain, then that really is where we need to start. And the reason for that is that pain coming from cartilage versus ligament versus a nerve in the area or muscle spasming or trigger points. we're going to treat that differently. So your treatment plan is going to look differently based on the good information that we need to get from the outset.
Wow. Because what you just made me think about is two things here. You're saying people are being treated without being evaluated, but we have one of the biggest opioid crises going on in the United States right now. And if people are being given pain medication as treatment and they're not being evaluated, now I understand why.
Yes, which definitely creates its whole other host of issues there. Yeah. So we need all of us who have chronic joint pain, get a good evaluation. If you haven't, look into what type of orthopedic doctor or sports medicine doctor or chiropractic doctor. There's even some that specialize in sports medicine or physical therapists. Like we really just need that information in order to put together a good, strong, individualized treatment plan. Jumping off from that, so that's sort of the step one. Step two is looking at nutrition, looking at what we are just taking in and day out, seeing where are any potential deficiencies there, and then also what metabolically wise may be too much for someone. So on the deficiency route, I'm looking at protein intake, healthy fat levels. All of these are really important for cartilage and joint regeneration, which is one of the primary aspects we're focusing on with the osteoarthritis. And then looking from a metabolic standpoint, having some sort of metabolic disease, whether that's what we would call metabolic syndrome, which is sort of, it's more like a hormonal imbalance, or heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, some of these other types of metabolic conditions. Often people will have an element of insulin resistance as part of their condition. And that has a crossover effect into joint health, because when someone's insulin resistant, they're often producing too much insulin after their meals, and particularly meals that have more simple or refined carbohydrates. That excess insulin is actually a direct irritating factor to our joints. So if those joints are already inflamed, already challenged, then the excess insulin is just going to be just an irritating.
Can I get you to repeat every meal? Repeat that one more time for the people so yes. that they actually hear and it sinks in this time that meals that are, explain that one more time, because she just said that the meals that we eat, if they are not healthy, so to speak, for us, they are leading to insulin resistance. So those of you who are diabetic or pre-diabetic or slowly creeping into that realm, these are key facts that you actually need to pay attention to, because she's actually telling you that the reason why you're feeling the aches and the pains and things that you're feeling in your body is because of that direct thing. So I'm sorry, I'm gonna let you repeat that again, doctor.
You did so good. Yes. So there's a lot of different types of metabolic diseases. And overall in the US, about 7 out of 8 adults seem to be having at least some component of these. So more of us as adults in the US than don't have some sort of metabolic challenge. That's gonna set up a sensitivity. We might say that your body's just going to be reacting differently, and that with meals, and predominantly those that have higher levels of simple carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates, added sugars, things like that, that's going to create a scenario where people with that sort of metabolic challenge already in the background is going to create excess levels of insulin after those meals. And that is a direct pro-inflammatory, irritating compound to our joints.
All right, just so I'm glad she repeated that so that everybody could hear that again, because that's important. People don't, you know, in my line of work as a nutritionist, I get to see those things. People really don't understand, you know, how important what you eat and how it affects your body. Listening to you tell people about the insulin resistance going directly to the joint health is important, because those little aches and pains that you're feeling that you think are just from you doing something the wrong way could actually be from what you're ingesting in your diet.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly think of it that it can just be more fuel. Like maybe there was a little fire, and with that nutritionally just not being aligned with what you need, it's just more fuel on that fire. Those dots really just are not connected between metabolic disease and joint health. But we know with osteoarthritis, a major risk factor is having metabolic disease for this reason exactly. So. Wow. I would say then, so going from nutrition, then I look at how someone is moving. Well, first, are they moving their body? Are they getting regular exercise, or are they more sedentary or inactive? And kind of, I'm often moving my patients from inactive, from more sedentary to having regular physical activity. First, just trying to get a sense of what do they enjoy. What is appropriate and best aligned with their joints and what their needs are. And then from there, looking a little bit more into muscular development, strength development, because with osteoarthritis, with joint diseases, we really need healthy, strong, well-developed muscles around those joint complexes so that we're kind of dispersing the load so that our body weight, gravity, everything isn't just going straight through that joint and creating excess pressure and stress, but is instead a little bit more evenly distributed through the whole area because of those muscles kind of taking over their fair share. So that's point three. We've gotten almost halfway through the seven. Then additionally, looking from there, so step four is what I call lifestyle, and that's sort of all the rest of the pieces of what is someone doing or not doing day in and day out, in terms of stress levels, sleep levels, alcohol, tobacco. So we know all of those actually do have a direct impact in our joint health. So if someone is going down that osteoarthritis process, then it's really in their best interest to take a look at, am I sleeping enough hours? That just in and of itself, that's when we regenerate, that's when we heal. So if someone's always cutting, you know, chronic undersleeping, then that's definitely going to be a negative impact. Stress levels, we know that chronic high stress, kind of just high stress day in and day out, which is kind of ever more common, especially nowadays. That excess cortisol is, like I mentioned with insulin, it is also a irritating substance to our joints. And so kind of getting a stress reduction, stress relieving plan, like how am I addressing just the natural stressors that will happen for anyone day in and day out? And then what am I doing in the moment or afterwards to really get that out, get that sort of that high stress level processed and out of our bodies. And then when it comes to the alcohol and tobacco, it's really a matter of these are compounds that are working against us. With the alcohol, it's really a matter of the more alcohol and more regular and higher alcohol intake someone has, that's going to be dehydrating to the tissue. And then when it comes to tobacco use, that can be really any kind of tobacco use, but that is, in a essence, poisoning and sort of leading to a degeneration of the joints, disc, ligaments, tendons, you name it, tobacco is not good for it.
So Dr. Angela, let me ask you, what are some of the biggest challenges that you have faced with your wellness practice, and how have you worked to overcome some of these things?
That's a great question. It's a really big topic. I would say that, but with myself and my patients, what we're often running up against is just systemic barriers in health systems and insurance systems. And that's often when patients are finding me, is because something didn't work or they weren't given any additional recommendations, like no further plan, or what they were given, they didn't like, the medication caused a side effect, it didn't actually help the pain. So when I'm often seeing patients is because they don't want to be taking a handful of ibuprofen every single day for the rest of their life, because every time they stop, the pain is somehow worse than it ever was, which actually does happen with those types of medications, taking them really regularly. and that they're feeling like they're falling between the cracks, because to be honest, in a certain way, they really are. It's that we have sort of this step one in our conventional medical spheres. And certainly for some people that helps. And for those that it doesn't, they're really felt like they're kind of out on their own. Their doctor saying you should have been better by now, or we don't really know what's going on, or the MRI looks totally normal for someone your age. And that's the end of story. And they're like, okay, fine, I hear that. But also, I'm in a lot of pain and I can't exercise like I used to. I can't even, you know, play with my kids or my grandkids like I used to. So I'm really picking up with patients very often when they've sort of fallen through the cracks, and we're just trying to be creative and think about, okay, what hasn't been looked into for you? What further investigation can we find for what is the reasons why your body isn't healing? And that's going to be individual for us all. And I guess layered onto that is sort of our insurance system and what they're choosing to cover and not cover. And in the 8 years of my practice, it does seem to be that just more and more of those barriers is put up over time in terms of just what plans will cover and now what they need pre-authorizations for. So they're needing medical offices to fill out all sorts of extra forms to prove whether or not a certain type of treatment or even an appointment or anything along those lines is covered. And then we add on deductibles, and it's sort of a mess between the standard of care not working for many people, and then the insurance companies just not really wanting to pay for anything else. So what this leaves me with between myself and my patient is just education. So I provide education on what things insurances can cover and what they don't cover. And we have conversations about, well, they've maybe gone through the system. They've gone to the quote unquote end of the line in that system. And if we need to look elsewhere and get a lab or an injection therapy or something like that, that isn't covered. Very often those things are never brought up because the sort of the standard of care model fits in with the insurance coverage model. So the things that are covered are talked about, and the things that are not covered are never talked about.
You and I are on the same page when it comes to that. I think we probably see some of the same type of patients. I know I get a lot of patients that come to me to go through what I call like a medication detox process. And that is where they're trying to work themselves off of the medications that have been prescribed to them by traditional doctors, because they don't want to take those medicines. They're not liking the side effects or the way that the medicines make them feel. So when you say that, you're speaking right to me with that one. I'm like, yes, I hear you with that 100%. We have a standard of care that matches exactly what the insurance is going to cover, as opposed to actually trying to figure out what's wrong with our patients.
Yeah. And what you do is so important, because so many patients come to me, and especially this is brought up in first visits with new patients, where they have this list of medications, like, what are you taking this for? What are you taking that for? Sometimes they don't know, or sometimes I know what that medication is used for.
And yeah,
they know what it was supposed to be prescribed for, but I'm like, is it helping? Like, well, I don't know. You've been taking it for 5 years and you don't know if it's helping?
I see that a lot. And then I see the ones that are taking medications for the side effects of the medications that they initially started taking. And then they're trying to figure out how they went from one drug to 10 drugs. And it's because you're taking medication for the side effects of the one drug and the side effects of the other drugs that you're taking for the side effects of that drug.
Yes. And so that's sort of the system, and it just kind of builds, and it's like this snowball effect, and people don't know how to get out of it because that was the insurance approved route. I mean, I hate to be a little bit cynical, but that's what I see.
But it's the truth though. Yeah.
Yeah. So often, and I had a patient, gosh, I think it's been about a year or so since I've seen her, but she definitely comes to mind because she had come to me for a chronic joint pain. And she said, I've, you know, you're my seventh doctor to see this, and sort of kind of like, I really need, well, yes, obviously she really needs someone to figure it out, but she's like, you're kind of almost desperate. Like, you're my seventh doctor. I was like, well, then my only job is for you not to have number eight. And with, and going through what we talked about earlier, like going through a process of evaluating, of figuring out like what was going on with her. Yeah, I really identified like, okay, you hurt that one ligament during the course of her work duties. And we were able to actually get that solved, get that healed for her. And that was that.
Wow. See, but the fact that she had to go through seven doctors before she got to you, that's a problem with the healthcare system. Like, we need to fix and address that.
Well, that's what we're doing, right? Yeah, because the whole system, its own pressures over time has really created that environment where now doctors, and I'll say, you know, in those bigger medical systems, they are feeling they're really forced to see, eight patients an hour or something like that, because that's what the system mandates from them. And that's what creates the scenario where people are not heard, not listened to, not thoroughly evaluated, because the prescription pad is a lot faster.
Yeah, but the prescription pad is almost poison. So we have to be very careful about what, like, doctors out there, you, and I know you guys are on mandated time schedules with, you know, some of these bigger organizations, but you guys have got to start being a little bit more careful about, you know, prescribing just anything for, because it's not just what you prescribe then, it's the effects of what you prescribe that you end up having to deal with. So you end up making the situation a little bit worse than what it was to start out with.
Yeah, there's certainly concerns about a lot of the medications that are used specifically for patients coming for pain. And I do see that patients are referred to physical therapy a lot option. And something that's very encouraging to me is, I think, just the knowledge and awareness of these kind of non-conventional orthopedic and chronic joint pain treatments, things that I do in office, I'm seeing more of that. So I've been seeing, especially in the last year or two, more facilities, more doctors in the area referring. They hear about this, and because they have patients that are at the end of the line, like, that medication didn't work, that referral didn't work within their system, surgical candidacy, okay, not a candidate, and they're like, well, try prolotherapy, or referring to a doctor. Like, the just because we have so many millions of people in our country who have chronic joint pain, and when the conventional route doesn't work, I think the awareness is building.
Well, and see, that's where I took my next level. I recently became a certified yoga teacher, but I'm actually in classes now to become a yoga therapist, because I want to be able to help my diabetic and my my hypertension patients, you know, figure out ways to ease some of their pain, or figure out ways to increase some of their mobility as well, without utilizing any type of drug or any type of prescription, so to speak, and doing it in a holistic way.
Well, and you really need to, because there is no drug replacement for exercise. and anyone with, you know, we're talking about chronic joint pain, but also diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, whatever you have going on, you still need to be moving your body. It doesn't matter what your diagnosis is, you need to be moving your body. And I get that there's often a lot of challenges in that, people not feeling up to it, not having the energy, like, well, my hips already hurt. I don't want to do, I don't want to do that fitness class or yoga or something. And so I'm just a big cheerleader about, if you have chronic joint pain,
It's funny that you say that. I actually teach chair yoga, and I teach it. I got my practicum. I passed my certification with a chair yoga class that I designed for a patient who had hip replacement surgery and had mobility issues and couldn't, because you can't extend your hips certain ways and you can't do a lot of different yoga poses. But I know of ways that you can do that. So that's what my job is.
That's good. Yeah, because you've got to keep going. So even if you have arthritis, and even if a joint hurts, you just got to be creative, and you got to work with somebody and figure out how can you work out instead of like, we're not going to accept that your joints hurt and you're going to be sedentary. Like, that's not an option.
That's not an option.
Just going to get worse.
It doesn't work for us anymore that way.
No.
And so, even with, I have clients. That's why I'm really excited to have you on, because again, I work with a lot of senior patients, and what I'm always telling them is, I don't care how old you are. I'm not going to allow you to let your body age to where you think you're supposed to be. My grandmothers both are in their 90s. One is older than the other. She's 92 years old. My grandmother worked up until last year, and she refused to allow us to take, she walked to the bus stop every day. She walked back home from the bus stop because she refused to allow us to take her to the bus stop, because she understood how important it was for her to maintain movement so she would not get stuck. But she also knew that if she maintained movement, it would prevent her joints from getting stiff as well.
Yeah, it's like what they say, if you don't move it, you lose it. you gotta keep moving those joints to, on a anatomic level, they don't have their own blood supply, vasculature, nerves going in and out. So what you have to do is you literally have to move those joints in order for them to get new oxygen, blood flow, nutrients, and what we call passive diffusion. So if you're not moving, your joints are starved and they're deprived of oxygen. And so you have to have some exercise, some movement on a daily basis in order to just give them everything that they need.
Wow. How many patients, or let me ask you this, what's the time, tell me about a patient of yours that actually touched your heart and maybe changed the way you do your practice now?
Oh, that's really great. So I would say that a few, I will try to narrow it down to one. but it's a similar topic. A couple of patients I've seen, and I would say they're new to me in the last year or so, and they came specifically referred from, one was a chiropractor, one was a physical therapist, and these other providers knew that I do this kind of non-surgical orthopedic care, and so they were referred to me, and like right off the bat, gung-ho, okay, I'm here for injection therapies. There's something Prolo, something, I'm not really sure what they are, but my doctor said that they work great. And so I'm here and give me the injections now. And so I'm like, okay, I appreciate your enthusiasm, and we're going to keep going through the rest of the appointment. I need to get all the rest of the information on you. And it was two patients that were very similar, where there was all these other, we have boxes that we check for new patient forms. And as part of the conversation of new patients, like, I'm just getting a sense there's more going on. Like, yes, there's some chronic joint pain, but also there's some fatigue and some foggy headedness. And there's a lot of other, hair shedding, hair coming out more than we're wanting. So with these two patients, they trusted me. They appreciated what I had to say, whereas, yes, you do have a joint that would be a candidate for injection therapy. Also, I believe there's something else metabolically or hormone-wise going on that I think it would just be in your best interest to get treated first, to then, if you have the injection therapies, I think you'll have a better response. So one in particular, we found that she was hypothyroid, so not enough thyroid hormone. And the other, we found that she had some other types of hormone deficiencies with estrogen, testosterone. And so these were patients that, like, they could have easily said, no, I'm here for injection therapies. Don't talk to me about that other stuff. I see my other doctor once a year. That's not the important thing, but they listened, and we worked through this process of getting their hormones in balance so that they responded really, really well to the injection therapies. Because I've seen other patients where they just, for whatever reason, they had the injection therapies and then some deficiency was found after the fact, the response just really isn't going to be as good. And so working with those patients kind of reinstilled my mindset on, we really need to work on our whole health in order for our joints also to be as healthy as they possibly can be.
That's true. That is actually true, though. Because if there is an underlying condition, that would take some pressure off of your joints as well, to, before you even do joint therapy, to treat those underlying conditions first, then see if, you know, you even need the joint, the injections for joint therapy. That's true. Like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've also had patients where they came to me specifically for what we say, some endocrine symptoms, and maybe it was like energy or insomnia, mood changes, other things. And they said, oh yeah, maybe I have a little bit of knee achiness, a little bit of shoulder pain. That's not why I'm here. That's not my priority. So we go through the whole investigation process. So several times I've found low thyroid levels. And so we've been able to balance that out. And that other achiness that they thought was like, it's not really a priority, that just went away. So I've definitely seen that hormonal deficiencies can hurt. And by treating them, that can in and of itself be a major factor for some people with
chronic. I wonder how many people actually know that a lot of their aches may be caused by hormonal deficiencies.
Not enough. That's what I'm a big cheerleader for. I want to spread that message.
Yeah. I mean, I'm ecstatic that you're on the show and people are going to hear it now. But, you know, that does make you wonder. And it goes back to what you said before. We're just treating people and not really examining them. So people are being treated for chronic pain, and it may not even be chronic pain. It just may be, like you said, a hormonal deficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that speaks to, and I didn't mention this previously, but sort of part of our medical system over time, it has evolved more and more into what we call siloing. So the cardiologist only looks at the heart, and the endocrinologist only looks at your blood sugar, and the rheumatologist only looks at the joints. But that's not how we're set up. That's just not biology. It's one whole system, but our medical system, just generally speaking, is not set up to deal with everything in an integrated manner. It's really more of like a specialist manner. And although I think of myself as a specialist in joint pain, but I really think of it, if I'm going to label myself as anything, a specialist in the connections between joint pain and our greater health as a whole. I mean, just talking about like nutrition, for example, that probably doesn't really come up at the general appointment with a rheumatologist, but we sure do know that nutrition.
But I know for a fact. Yeah, I know for a fact that the things you put in your mouth affect how you feel, affect your every ailment that comes or is presented in your body can be stemmed back to something you ate or how you ate it or something, clearly, just like that. So, yeah. And that's the last thing that most doctors actually talk to their patients about, is what they ate.
And part of that is probably, you know, time pressures that we talked about, but also just, you know, nutrition as a whole is not very well valued or taught comprehensively in a lot of medical systems. I mean, in my schooling, let's see, I think we had 3 years of nutrition, and in a lot of your medical schools, you're going to have, you know, maybe one class for one.
I was going to say, it's one class. And it's not even an in-depth class. It's just skimming over it, to teach you the USDA standards, and that's about it. I do know that I actually find myself training doctors and their staff on diabetic education, heart health education, so that they understand that your first response should not necessarily always be a medication. Perhaps you should just give your patient this little easy meal plan and say, follow this for about a month, and then let's see how it works for you.
Yeah, I mean, that just makes a lot of sense in terms of in the naturopathic field, what we call like a treatment pyramid, where the foundation is not just jumping to the medication or the surgery. The foundation is like, what are you doing? What are you eating? How are you moving on a day-to-day basis? And then we start layering, okay, what additional things should we be putting in, you know, supplements, herbs, vitamins, other types of hands-on treatment. And then yes, like medications and surgeries can have their place, but they're not the base of the pyramid. They're at the top. We need to start with the general foundations before we go to those additional steps.
Yes.
This is a 2-second nutrition tip. Today's tip is ask your doctor about regular cholesterol and blood pressure screenings. Those are important as you get older. This has been a 2-second nutrition tip.
NRI Wellness brings you the latest health and nutrition information, creates customized nutrition programs, and walks you through the process to ensure your success.
If you want to be seen, you have to stop being invisible to opportunity. I'm Kay Henry, licensed mental health counselor and host of Black Therapy Uncensored. Your prescription to positivity starts here.
Did you know that the average person carries around 5 to 20 pounds of fecal matter in their intestines, depending on their diet? Some people are walking around feeling sluggish, constipated, unable to lose weight, skin issues, and allergies, all because of the toxins that are in their intestines. Listen, life gives us enough battles to fight. Your health shouldn't be one of those. If you change your mindset on how you actually view food, you will never have to worry about your health or weight again. I'm Ashley, owner of She Loves Wellness. I help people transition into a healthy lifestyle. I offer tips, recipe, and supplement kits to jumpstart your lifestyle change. Visit me on Facebook and IG at She Loves Wellness for your product information and samples. Don't forget, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle change.
So, Dr. Angela, why don't you tell us a little bit about, describe the process of, you know, your practice, how you run everything, what we could expect if we decided to become a patient of yours?
Sure. So I'm based in Oregon, and my private practice can see anybody within the state of Oregon. That's kind of how our medical licenses are set up. So I have a physical practice in Portland and also Salem. And so I see patients now, a lot of that is remote and telehealth, like everything else in the world. We've gone very digital these last few months, but I
we're
do
all
still
living
see,
virtually.
Yeah, we're all learning and figuring it out. And gosh, previously I probably did like 1 or 2 telehealth visits a year. And now it's been the majority of my practice on a weekly basis since March. I do see a limited number of patients in person, and that's predominantly just because of the injection therapies that I do. Not everything can be done over a virtual platform. So we have a very small number of patients I'm seeing in person. A lot of that, or even kind of pre-consultations, follow-ups, pretty much anything that we can do, we are doing virtual. And so that's specifically my medical practice. And then beyond that, I do a lot of online health education around people being able to take care of themselves, take care of their joints, work through a lot of the process that we've been talking about in terms of turning that joint degeneration into regeneration. And so on my website and on my social media, I'm always posting what's coming up. And so we're going through 5-day challenges about sort of building up and getting that momentum going for self-care specific to chronic joint pain. I also have a more in-depth 30-day program, and all of this is sort of self-directed online education through my platforms, where it's videos and it's worksheets, and it's sort of it's like a self-study university course on taking care of your joints. And I also, for those who are outside of the US, and that can be from more of the patient standpoint or the provider standpoint, I do remote consultations, second opinions, those kind of things. So I can provide, I'm not their doctor in that sense, but I am sort of the expert that they're getting a second take on. Okay, this is what's going on. This is the lab or imaging findings. This is what I'm being told. What else is out there? I'm sort of the doctor. What else is out there? Being able to tell them what additional things should be considered, can be looked into. And again, that's all sort of wrapped up in my website. And yeah, so that's what I do, is my private practice and then a whole lot of online education.
So what services, like, do you, if we were coming to see you, if I wanted to set up an appointment, what services would I be able to set up an appointment for through you? I know you do a lot of telehealth, so What outside, because it's so funny now, you really don't know what to say because everything is telehealth now. So say we weren't in this virtual world and I was able to come to your office one-on-one after getting a referral from my primary care physician because I'm not liking the services or the quality of care that I'm being provided with them. What would I, like, what can I come to you for? Is it just joint health or do you see patients for other things as well?
Yeah, I certainly do see patients. So I hadn't really talked about this previously, but early on in my practice, how I started out was very strongly in women's health and hormone balancing. And so that's where the connection between the hormones and the joints has really come from for me. And so I certainly have patients where we're not doing anything injection or joint pain related. I would say that my practice is a little bit more skewed to those that have joint pain, but it's not 100%. And so patients are starting to see me right now. We're even sometimes doing first visits remotely via telehealth or in the office. And that first appointment was really about getting all the information and figuring out where the investigation should happen that hasn't, or what follow-up needs to happen, what additional testing or sometimes testing for the first time do I recommend. And when it comes to the joint pain types of concerns, then of course, what does my physical exam tell them? And with the type of training and techniques and injection procedures that I do, I have a very keen sense on how I explain to patients is like, I'm drilling way down deep into what the connective tissue is doing to try and figure out what specific structures are causing you pain, and not one person's knee pain looks exactly like someone else. So figuring out like where the sources of pain are coming from, whether that's cartilage, joint capsule, meniscus, if we're talking about knee, ligaments, tendons, nerves, everything around there, and then strategizing what does the course of care look like. So that'll be a little bit different depending on, is it quote unquote, just pain coming from the joint and there's nothing else sort of systemically or holistically going on, that's all really well dialed in. Maybe they're referred to me from another naturopathic doctor and they got everything really well sorted out, but they just can't get over that chronic ankle pain that came because they kept rolling their ankle too many times. So sometimes it really is focused on that joint or orthopedic piece. And then we talk about if they're a candidate for injection therapies, there's a couple of different styles. I do prolotherapy and another one called platelet-rich plasma injections or PRP. So that sometimes it's a one treatment or a series of treatment. Again, that's all just really depending on what structurally is going on and the degree of their injury or degeneration. So if it's a really mild case, then it may not be, you know, maybe one treatment or not much, versus if it's more severe, they may necessitate more treatment. I think about the time frames there. Sometimes it's like a 3-month time frame with an evaluation and treatment and follow-up, and that might be specifically for the injection therapies, or it might be something else like thyroid, for example.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What's the time or maybe something in your practice that you did for one of your clients that didn't go as expectedly but actually turned out better?
Ooh, that's such a good one. Well, one thing that comes to mind, and I don't know if this fits exactly, but it's definitely what popped into my head, which is that sometimes I have had patients come in for one, like it was a shoulder pain that I'm thinking of. And so we went through the evaluation, we did do injection therapies, and they came back and the shoulder pain was great, but now they have elbow pain and they're like, what happened? What did you do? And I'm like, I swear we didn't touch the elbow. And so this has actually come up a couple of times. And after we talked about it a little bit more, what we figured out is that the elbow was there the whole time, but we treated what I called the squeakiest wheel. The shoulder was the squeakiest wheel, and now we found a second squeakiest wheel because for that particular case, the patient, their job was working overhead. So the shoulders and the elbows were overhead, and they're doing their overhead work day in and day out, and that just really aggravated both of those areas. So sometimes there's surprises. I would say that often we can piece together the story to figure out like where'd that come from? What really went on there?
Okay, so you do a lot of what we call root work, getting down to the basis of the problem instead of just what we described earlier, of just phasing and treating the initial issue. So what are some of your favorite patient stories? What are some of the things that have really touched you about some of your patients that, something that you yourself weren't expecting, not a procedure or anything like that, but just something that you could say that you did that perhaps maybe changed one of your patients' lives and made them look at things a lot differently?
Well, a recent patient, and I absolutely love when this happens, and I keep doing my job because this happens on the regular. A recent patient came to me and she said she had back pain and that she had back pain for 20 years. And so we went through the evaluation and figured out it was actually an SI, so the sacroiliac joint that's like way down low by your back pockets. And it's where the sacrum, so at the bottom of the spine, connects onto the hip bones. And so after the birth of her last child, something had gotten overly stretched or a little bit damaged. Just, you know, labor and delivery is not the easiest physical process. So sometimes
women don't listen. We got to pause for 1 second. Okay. Men don't understand that labor and delivery oh my God, that changes your body so much. And it is not, that is almost like going through death and not coming out of it with feeling everything about it.
Yes. And so all of our bodies are going to be acting differently. And it is totally normal for something to happen that's like, where did that come from? Well, yeah, it was just part of like the physically challenging effect that is having a baby. So for her, it had been one of her SI joints had just hurt. And her youngest kid was 20. So she had that pain for that child's whole life. And this thing didn't, you know, she tried this route, that route, didn't really see much of anything. So just kind of lived with it. And I figured out, okay, it's not your, you know, quote unquote back or the lumbar spine. It's not the low back as we think of it. It's actually lower than that. But she really hadn't gotten a good evaluation and diagnosis. I'd say specifically diagnosis, because she had never been... So we had a good conversation about like, yeah, it's your SI joint. This is where it's coming from. Here's the picture. Like this is the exact joint that's your problem. And after we did the injection therapies, it worked great for her and that she was actually able to get down. And for her, the big thing was that she had, so this was her younger child. She had, I think, two more that were older. And so she had grandchildren and could not really play with the grandkids. She was just kind of like stuck in the chair. You know, grandkids would come over. She couldn't really play with them. But now that her, you know, back wasn't hurting, her SI joint had healed, then she could actually get down on the ground for like the first time ever with some of her kids that were like in the 3 to 5 year old time frame and actually, you know, play with them, play Legos, like play on the floor. And she had never been able to do that before.
Oh, that's really special. That's so sweet. Oh, wow, you got me over here emotional. Like, oh my God, that's super cool. Because you want those type of results for your patients. You want life-changing type of situations for them. Wow, that's super cool, Dr. Cordell. All right, kudos to Dr. Angela for changing people's lives.
It's why I do what I do. I love those stories. I live for those stories.
Oh, I think we all do. Part of all of our professional practice has a lot to do with our purpose and why we do what we do. And it's to service other people and make them feel better and live a healthier, more well-being, more well-focused, and more, you know, just a happier and more peaceful life, an active life where they can get out and do and go and be okay and not feel anything or suffer from anything. So that's part of the reason why I think we are all in this wellness industry, period.
Yeah. That's what brings us to this field and kind of keeps us engaged in those changing people's lives. And that's why we do what we do.
That's absolutely true. It has been a great pleasure to have Dr. Angela on. So we're going to come to wrapping up our show. And as you guys know, we have our favorite four questions that we ask all of our guests just to show you a little bit about their personality. So you know that they're just like you and I. So Dr. Angela, my first question to you is, what's been the biggest failure that you've seen this year? And why do you think that happened? Now you can answer this on a personal level, on a global level, on a societal level, however you want to.
I would say, that it's probably that you gotta check your sources and have good sources of information, and that I've really seen a failure of a lot of people, and sometimes it's not that easy, even for myself with a medical degree, to really suss out when you're reading articles, like what is good information for me to be learning from and following, and what is maybe not great sources of information. And I have a really great colleague who comes from a background in journalism, and she calls it information hygiene. So you have hygiene in all other types of your life, and about having good information hygiene, like checking your sources. And just because you see something on Facebook, you got to look at where did that come from, and
yes,
what bias or what organization might that be coming from that wants you to think in a certain way. And it's not to say that it's automatically bad. It's that we all have to do our homework, and you all have to be diligent. And sometimes
due diligence. Yep.
Even if we know and agree with someone out there, they still may be sharing something that's from a faulty source. So that did not get any easier this year. This is probably the biggest challenge that I've seen from any year previous. And so you gotta keep digging.
Yeah.
You gotta keep looking into it, and you gotta check assumptions, even if you're agreeing with them.
Yeah, we've been, this year has been what I like to call the year of misinformation.
Yeah.
We don't know what source to believe, what to believe, what to say, what to think. We just have to say, oh, let's just do the research and find out for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of personal choices, work choices, family choices, social choices. Like everyone's trying to figure out what's the best path for me. What should I be doing, not be doing?
Yeah.
And so you got to just keep it up. You got to keep looking for good sources of information and critique them all. Like that's not a bad thing to critique a source, whether it's a journal or a website or a social media page, whatever it is. Like just be very, very picky and hold them to a high bar of expectation that they can't be passing on things that you're seeing like, well, that's really obviously problematic. Then that organization just might be. Any good source of information in journalism will be able to pass criticism, no problem.
Absolutely. So my next question for you is, what do you wish you'd known 10 years ago that you know now?
Gosh, that I guess it's okay to go a different route. There isn't one right way. And whether that's me and my practice and business and what I'm offering patients, or for any of us seeking our own care and our own answers, I think out of necessity, so 10 years ago, I was just at the end of my medical training, and we're trained to do everything and to handle everything and to provide everything to everyone. And then getting out into practice, that just really isn't the reality. It's not the most practical setup, because we really should be focused on a certain area in order to provide the most in-depth and comprehensive care. So very, very, very early on in my practice, before I realized that doesn't work so well, I was trying to do it all for everybody. And it took a moment, or I should say a year or two of practice, to realize I really can't do everything for everybody, and that's okay. That's not a bad thing. I'm not failing. I'm actually just wanting to excel in a certain area and to build up a great provider,
specialty,
directory,
yeah,
a group of friends, right? Okay, I'm not the expert in that, but let me tell you who is.
Okay. I'm definitely understanding that. Now, what makes you feel inspired or like your best self?
Gosh, probably getting off the grid, getting into nature, getting quiet space alone, no electronics, just me in a natural environment. Whether that's we have a little bit of property in our rural area, so I can do that, or getting out into mountains. This is the brief period of time in Oregon where it's actually kind of sort of okay temperature to go in the water. It's pretty cold here all the rest of the year. So just kind of getting out and spending some quality time away from the internet and technology and just being with nature.
I totally get that one. I'm an outdoor person. I actually enjoy being outside on a regular basis. My yoga studio is outside. So,
nice.
Yeah, that's how much I love being outside. I practice outside. I meditate outside. I love being in nature. So I totally get that with you. So my last question for you is, if you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it say and why?
I'd want to have one big punchy thing to say to everybody. So it would probably say cortisone injections are not harmless. And the reason for that is that they're a very common part of the of our standard of care for joint pain. Whatever hurts, we put a cortisone injection there.
I was just going to say, that's the common, like most people will go to their doctor for a cortisone injection.
Yes. And I get the reason for it. It's a steroid medication. It does suppress the immune system where you put the injection. It does make that inflammation go away. That does usually make the pain go away. But like my billboard, as we've established now, says they're not harmless. And we see this particularly when someone is getting multiple, which is still fairly common. Now, I would say a lot of centers around me are saying you can only get 3 a year, but 3 a year and then another 3 the following year. Like, we do know that cortisone has a cumulative effect in worsening arthritis, accelerating that degenerative joint disease and bringing on joint replacements earlier than if someone doesn't use them. So they are not harmless. I get that they're used. I get that they're common, but there's drawbacks as well.
Oh, you're going to have to come on a whole nother show and talk about that. The reason why is, what about these sports athletes out here that get those cortisone shots on a regular? They get those more than the 3 times a year. They get them once per game, sometimes even twice per game. So we're going to have to, that's going to be our next topic of conversation. We're definitely going to have to come on and have you talk about the cortisone shots, the harmfulness behind it, and what holistic and alternative options there are for people.
Yeah, I would love that, because there's so much more we can talk about in that sports medicine field that we haven't even touched on.
That's what I was going to say. So you guys just know that this is not the last time Dr. Angela will be on the show. We will definitely have her back. And the next time we have her back, we'll be talking to her about sports medicine. And I know that's something a lot of you all are interested in, especially if you have children that play sports, if you play sports, if you have a spouse that plays sports. So that would be something that we all need to hear about, because you have common joint, knee, elbow injuries, ankle injuries in sports. And a cortisone shot is something commonly given to athletes. So what Dr. Angela just said just opened up the door for a whole nother conversation, you guys. But that's next time. We're going to get Dr. Angela's information so that you all know where to contact her. And don't forget, everything that she's going to tell us right now, you can also find on NRIwellness.com on our website, because we also will have an article about Dr. Angela on there and a link to all of her websites and social media sites as well. So Dr. Angela, tell our listeners how they can contact you.
Sure. So my website is drcortal.com, and it's drcortal. And on there, you can kind of go any choose your own adventure path. I have information on there about patients who are based, that's again, my Oregon-based practice, remote consultations. I do a lot on social media as well. on Facebook and Instagram. It's the same handle on both. It's Dr. Angela Cortal, spelled all the way out. And so on my website and on the social media platforms, also, you can find out what I'm doing next. I'm always doing something next. I'm never sitting still. So whether it's a 5-day challenge to start caring for your joints or a more in-depth 30-day program, both of these are coming up. And then I do the occasional masterclass, online videos, both on Instagram and Facebook. My book, Younger Joints Today, was published almost exactly a month ago. You can find that on Amazon. And right now we're sort of in the middle of doing a virtual book club around that, where each week we're meeting remotely and we're talking about a different step, which is its own chapter, and kind of delving through that. I answer reader questions. And so we've been going through that as well. So a whole lot is going on, and most of it is online right now.
Awesome. So you guys, we are so grateful for having Dr. Angela on today. And again, this will not be the last time. We will definitely be having her back. As soon as I hang up with you all, I'm going to discuss that with her on her next availability. And I will let you know as well. So you can hear this podcast and any of our other interviews on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and a plethora of other platforms. And also check out our YouTube channel, NRI Wellness, and you can find this as well as all of our past interviews on there as well. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of the 10 Dimensions of Wellness. Be well in every facet of your life. Have a good night, you guys.
NRI Wellness brings you the latest health and nutrition information, creates customized nutrition programs, and walks you through the process to ensure your success.